What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey everybody, welcome to Listen Money Matters. So informative, it's almost illegal. My name is Thomas and I'm here as always with Andrew. Hey man, how are you and what are you drinking today?
Ah, good dude, good. I am just drinking my Keegan Ales Mother's Milk. And I don't know if it is as good as Mother's Milk, but it's really, really good.
Is it a stout?
Yeah.
I have a, well, I'm not drinking it now, but I have a milk stout. I wonder if it's like a common thing.
Really? Which one do you have?
Mine's a Left Hand Brewing Company, I want to say.
Ah, I love Left Hand.
Yeah.
I wonder if they taste similar because they're both have milk in the name. You know,
maybe.
Stout.
If the name's similar, obviously it has to taste the same. Did the sunlight from the windowsill like add some flavor?
It does. It does. It's a special New York sun.
Cool. Well, I'm just drinking my Traveler's Winter Ale. Hopefully it doesn't go away too soon because it's seasonal. But I think it's my favorite beer ever.
Really?
Like it's technically a shandy, but it's the most beery tasting thing they've ever put out, and it's so good. And yeah, I like it more than Omega Gang and all those other like crazy expensive beers I've had. Those are good, but it's just so damn tasty.
I see you drinking them a lot. Was it the yellow mustache that turned you on to the whole?
Well, that's the original the lemon shandy.
Mm.
But I think.
So they all don't have a mustache on them.
The mustache it was a draw. I will admit, like, I picked it up because of that. But the taste is what kept me buying it. So, yeah.
I have this great picture. We went to a beer, like, fest thing. And Laura was there. My friend's wife was there. And they were giving out mustaches for, you know, their beer.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have the two ladies with their mustaches on. And it's just a cool picture.
Did you know if you buy the box, like a six pack, you can actually cut a mustache out of it?
Really?
And like, yeah, I think that's where they get them.
Huh.
It's pretty funny. But yeah, so today's catchphrase comes from Larry Ludwig, and it was so informative, it's almost illegal. Hopefully it's not almost illegal.
Except in Delaware. I think everything's illegal there.
Yeah, okay. I assumed everything was illegal in New Jersey, but apparently you're
actually, that's true. Funny. No, everything's just corrupt here.
Anyway, hey, if you want to get your catchphrase featured on the show, then send it to us via Twitter. We're at Money Matters Man over there. And today's episode, we're going to be talking to some Money Matters team member. His name is Johnny Horta. And hey, Johnny, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. So what are we talking about today? Taxes?
Yeah, we're going to, you know, talk a little bit about taxes and see if we can help some people out there since tax season opens up on the 20th. So I know a lot of people are eager out there to get their refunds and get their money back in their pocket from good old Uncle Sam.
Is it always January 20th, by the way?
No, it kind of depends on, you know, every year. You know, last year or this year, actually, they were thinking of it's going to start later only because they had to extend some tax breaks and things like that. So Congress didn't get that done till December. So they were thinking it started late, but the IRS came out and said it starts on the 20th. So that's when they'll start accepting e-filed returns.
Okay, so I can't actually wake up January 1st and do my taxes like I want to.
Well, you can. I mean, you can. You just have to get all your paperwork in order. And if your employer gives it to you or you have all your paperwork, then you can. But the IRS won't accept it until the 20th.
Gotcha. So if I send it to them, they're just going to let it sit there and then open it up on the 20th, basically?
Yeah, it's all electronically. So yep.
Oh, or that, yeah. So I remember when I used to mail in my tax return thing.
Oh, you... Oh, see, I remember, I don't know if it's always like this, but with TurboTax, you have to pay extra. And I was just like, I don't do envelopes. I don't know how to do
that. Oh, well, when I was like a teenager, I like worked at the grocery store and I had to do my taxes and I didn't really know what TurboTax was. I don't even know if they were around at that time.
So you filled all the forms out?
Yeah. So I went to the library. I like grabbed the forms, like wrote it out in pen and like mailed it in to get my refund.
Every time I talk to you, you sound more and more ambitious. It's
well, I had a job and my mom was like, you got to do your taxes. And I was like, all right. And I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore because it's a pain in the butt.
So I just want to say that taxes, like just the word, like kind of makes me sweat a little bit. So for this episode, I put on extra deodorant, and I just want to say that we're going to, like, wade carefully in. So we're going to do, like, multiple episodes, and hopefully after the series with Johnny doing all the heavy lifting and us just, you know, not really doing much lifting, you won't perspirate as much when you hear.
Right. And Johnny, you're a tax accountant, right?
Well, yeah. So I have a tax business, HortaFinancialServices.com, shameless plug. So we do taxes here, pretty much individual taxes just for, like, friends, and it's relatively small. We're just starting out. So I just find it really interesting and do everything I can to learn about it.
Well, Johnny, why would I ever hire you over hiring that DVD I get in the mail, TurboTax?
So there's kind of, you know, TurboTax is good. TurboTax is going to walk you through an interview process, and it's basically going to ask you, hey, do you have this or do you have that? And with a lot of yes or no questions, and insert your W-2 forms here. But what it's not going to do, it's not going to really help you interpret the law. I know a lot of people like have home office deductions and things like that that they want to claim, but you know, TurboTax, if you don't really understand the law that it's kind of giving you and make you answer the questions correctly, you may or may not be within the confines of the law. So if you know, if you were to come to me or any other tax pro out there in the United States, we'll help you interpret that law. It's I'm probably not going to lie to you, it's going to be a little bit more costly, but at the end of the day, we'll do it correctly and right the first time.
I remember I did a hell of a lot of reading to like deduct my office. Someone had told me something, and taxes, like, I've been doing my own taxes, but I just got married and then bought a place and whatever. And it took me days of work, like lots. Like, I was, Laura was, you know, Andrew, all right, is there anything I do for you? Whatever. Cause it was just taking me so much time. So I definitely could resonate with that whole interpreting the law piece.
Yeah. And for my part, I want peace of mind. So that's why I used to do the TurboTax thing. And I finally have an accountant now, because I just, with like the self-employed thing and all the business and expenses and all that, I just, like, I don't want to get something wrong, I guess. So
you had reminded me, I'd seen the commercial before, Johnny, you had reminded me that H&R Block's running this commercial, and it's like, get your billion back, America, you know, and they're basically saying that there's $1 billion a year, or at least last year, left on the table from American taxpayers that they didn't get back that they could have. And you were kind of explaining it to me. Could you explain, like, why this is? Like, is the government stealing from us? Are we just stupid?
Well, I guess that depends on what side of the political game you're on, if the government's stealing from you or not. But in regards to taxes, what they're really saying is there's tons of tax breaks out there. The IRS code is so complex. You know, you may or may not be getting every single deduction or credit that you may deserve based on everybody's individual situation. So, I mean, I guess we can start really by kind of going through the very basics of taxes and how your refund comes about, I guess, without getting really technical and really nerdy. You know, we can do that later. But so just to kind of start out and, you know, give some premise to it. So the United States has five different tax brackets, right? Everybody's like, oh, I'm in a tax bracket. I'm almost close to the next one, or I'm just below that one.
Which,
right?
Was actually how I explained it to you when we first started talking about this. That was my understanding of it. It's like, well, I could knock myself from 35 to 32 or whatever.
Yeah, so you can with the right credits and the right deductions, I guess you can say, but what it comes down to is they're called marginal tax brackets, and now I don't really want to get too nerdy here, but
no, explain it, because I didn't get it until you had explained it for me.
So using a hypothetical scenario of somebody making, we'll say, $55,000. So $55,000 puts them into a 25% tax bracket, so that they'll pay 25% on $55,000. That's kind of what that means there. But it's not 55. It's not 25% of the entire $55,000. So from their first $10,000 that they'll get, will be taxed at 10%. The second, the income from basically 10,000 to 36,000 will be taxed at 15%. And then from 36,000 to 55,000 will be taxed at 25%. So that's kind of what we mean by marginal. So
it's not like everything is at 35% where you drop down a bracket and like you're saving a massive amount of money. You're just not, you're just saving that like minimal.
People are like, oh, if I can get myself into the 20% tax bracket, like they think they're going to like, they think that everything they make right now is going to be 25% and they can save a, like a buttload of money by going down. When in reality, like you're only going to be taxed an extra 5% on whatever's past $50,000 a year, right?
Yeah, right. Totally correct. Yeah. So, and then we're right there. We're talking gross income. So, kind of taking it one step further, then there's taxable income that we kind of have to worry about. So, gross income. These are our scenarios. $55,000. In addition to that, you know, so if somebody contributes to a traditional IRA. You know, they put $5,000 in a traditional IRA. There's adjustments there, so they'll adjust that down to $50,000. So now we're getting like really, really into the weeds a little bit. But so that's how a traditional IRA will help you. It'll take your gross income minus whatever contributions you have to your traditional IRA, because a traditional IRA is before tax, and then that'll give you your AGI, your adjusted gross income.
So, okay.
If I understand correctly, if you make $50,000 and you put $5,000 in a 401k, then your AGI changes from 50 to 45, because you put five in, you know, into a you've reduced your taxable income by 5K, and then because you've reduced your taxable income by 5K, you're not like dropping a tax bracket or dramatically affecting the 45K that you earned. You're just saving on taxes only on the 5K you contributed to that 401k.
Well, so if you contribute to a 401k, since a 401k is an employer plan, you're really reducing your gross income. So you're going to reduce it way before it even hits your tax return. So the gross income that's reported on your tax return is going to be $5,000 less, right? And then on top of that, if you contribute to a traditional IRA, because just kind of the way traditional IRAs work with brokerage accounts is you contribute it after the money hits your bank account, so essentially after the money's taxed already by your employer, then it adjusts on your tax return as an adjustment. So now your $5,000 to your 401k and your $5,000 to your traditional IRA is adjusted on your tax return.
Okay.
So I'm confused. So the 401k is just a vehicle to save money automatically and have your employer potentially match it, right? But then like you can choose where it goes based on the options your employer gives you, correct?
Right. Those are the investment options, so that's not really
so like say my employer has a 401k. Let me ask, so maybe I just don't know. If you had a 401k, could you elect for your 401k contributions to go into a Roth or not?
No, so a Roth is like just a different vehicle. Like so it's just a different tax vehicle.
Okay, I guess I was under the impression the 401k was just a setup for them to take money out of your paycheck and invest it for you, so, and match.
401k is like pre-tax. Dude, I thought you were a fan of the show.
I was. I guess I was under the impression like the 401k could, like, you have different investment options within the 401k, and like one of them could be a traditional or one of them could be a Roth. Maybe I'm like misunderstanding.
I take it back. I used to think you were ambitious like 15 minutes ago, and I just not.
All right, no, explain. That is the impression I got from you. So I'm going to blame you for now.
So real quick, 401k is pre-tax if it's like, you know, okay, traditional. And then, I mean, that's typically how it's discussed. And then IRA has a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. Traditional is pre-tax. Roth is post-tax contribution.
So if I put money into a 401k, it will not go into any form of IRA?
Correct. So like they're just completely different. Like, for example, 401k, you can't withdraw until you're like retirement age, barring some weird rules. IRA has different, there's just like different buckets with like different rules.
Okay, maybe I'm confused, because what I have to do for my business is a simple IRA, but then like my business entity, quote unquote, can contribute to it as well. Maybe it's just like different than a 401k.
I'll tell you what though, the next one, we got to go in deep there, because there's like so many, I think, just pitfalls with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like so many questions about it. But to kind of jump back, Johnny, you said that when you contribute to a 401k, it changes your gross income. And before, you said something about adjusted gross income, and I'm terribly confused. What's the difference? And like, why is my gross income, for lack of a better term, adjusted because I contributed to a 401k?
Okay, so your gross income is everything that you get, pretty much all income from all sources derived. That's kind of the definition that the IRS has. So that includes wages and salaries, taxable interest, capital gains, retirement distributions, just kind of anything that you would get your hands on. If you had a small business and made a profit there, that money would go in there. Any sort of, so that's your gross income, right? Mm. So a part of that is your the wages you get from your employer, but the wages you get from your employer are, so if you make $50,000 and get contribute $5,000 to your 401k, your employer is only going to report a $45,000 on your W-2.
Mm. Okay.
And so you add all those up, and then we get a number. For this instance, we'll say $45,000. And then on top of that, you contributed $5,000 to a traditional IRA. So now your adjusted gross income is $40,000.
Okay, so I can basically, I have two opportunities in this case to save money on my taxes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a ton other adjustments, but that's kind of the big one that everybody knows. I mean, you can deduct student loan interest as well. If you're a teacher, you can do some things. There's a ton more.
Okay. So the name of the game is to get your AGI, or adjusted gross income, as low as possible. Like, your gross is kind of almost untouchable, but your AGI, like, you could play with a lot.
Well, that really depends on like your strategy, right? So, do you want to contribute to a traditional IRA where your taxable income, you know, it's pre-tax, so you pay taxes when you pull it out, or do you want to contribute to a Roth IRA and it's post-tax and you don't even show it on your adjustment section?
Well,
so it kind of just depends on you.
Let me ask you this, because if say back to the original example, and I have a home office and I work from home one day a week, blah blah blah, and I want to write this off of my taxes, if I write off of my taxes, does that lower my AGI, or is that like even separate?
So perfect segue into what we're going to talk about next, right? You just hit the nail on the head. So now we have our AGI number, and for this example, we're at 45,000, right? So then, and additionally, it's decreased by two things. It's decreased by either a standard deduction or an itemized deduction. And your personal exemptions, how many dependents you claim.
Right? And wait a second, I think I need you to maybe say that again. So your AGI sits wherever it is because of, you know, IRA, 401k, blah, 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 all that stuff. And then you deduct from your AGI.
Yes, so we're going to deduct from our AGI now. So the first thing is either itemized deductions or standard deduction. So a standard deduction is really easy to explain. It's
I'm sorry. One more question.
Yeah.
One more question. And whether I'm reducing my number to whatever my AGI is, or I'm deducting from the AGI, I'm saving taxes both ways. So like, we can call it an apple, we can call it a pear, but this final number after AGI, after deductions, that's what I'm going to pay taxes on.
Yeah, we're going to get to taxable income here right now. This is part of the calculation of taxable income, where then we'll use the charts to figure out how much we actually paid.
Okay, sorry, but I interrupted you on the standard deduction versus itemized.
Yeah, so the standard deduction is, you know, just based on your filing status. So if you're married filing jointly, whether you're single or you're head of household or something like that. So a married filing jointly for me and you, Andrew, if we were to take the standard deduction, is $12,400. Thomas, I think you're single, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so Thomas is single. His standard deduction, if he were to take it, is $6,200 this year, right?
Oh,
so
it went up?
Yeah, so it kind of goes up every year. So this year it's $6,200. And then in addition to that, so now we have itemized deductions, right? And this is kind of where people really get into the weeds, where can I write it off or can I write it off? Your home office, for instance, right? If you didn't have a business, let's assume Andrew doesn't have a business right now, and he wanted to deduct his home office because he used it for the convenience of his employer, he would do that in what's called a Schedule A. So basically you add up all your itemized deductions, and the categories are like medical expenses, mortgage interest and real estate taxes. There's a miscellaneous section in there, your charitable contributions. There's a casualty loss thing. And then so we add up all those numbers and then everything that we have in those sections and those categories, and then we compare it to the standard deduction, and then we subtract it from AGI or whatever's higher. Then we subtract it from AGI.
So you would only go itemized. Like, you'd only say, I bought this trade magazine and I got new shoes to walk to work. You'd only do that if your total itemized would be higher than whatever your standard deduction would be.
Yes, there is some instances where it wouldn't be, but that's really in the weeds and nothing.
So you can't take both, basically.
No, it's either one or the other. Either you're taking the standard deduction, and it's basically less work, you know. But if you don't have, so like I owned a house, and even with my mortgage interest and my real estate taxes and everything I had, I would never even come close to the $12,400 number. So yeah. I just took the $12,400.
So dare I say, the name of the game is in itemized deductions.
I mean, it all works together. But I mean, if you were like in me, and you know, I don't have any medical expenses because I have, you know, healthcare that pays for everything, and I have my house didn't come close to $12,400. I mean, so I have to take the standard. You know, that's the smartest move for me.
So I don't want to go like too deep into like shooting itemized deduction ideas to you, because we could probably do a 5-hour episode on that. but I'm just curious, one selfish question, because I think, and I know we're going to do a small business based tax one soon, which I'm very excited for. But just to kind of like wet my palate a little bit, I have Listen Money Matters, and say Listen Money Matters needed money to, I don't know, buy a car or something, whatever. Can I give $1,000 of my money to Listen Money Matters and then use that as an itemized deduction?
So, no. Well, it's the short answer is no, only because Listen Money Matters itself, dependent on how you have it set up, the business setup, whether you have it as a sole proprietorship, an LLC that's a disregarded entity, and now we're getting really nerdy with some vocabulary, but, you know, or an S-Corp, you're basically investing in the company. So the asset, so if you bought a car or you bought a piece of equipment, like a new mic or something like that would be an asset that's on what's called a Schedule C, not so much in the itemized deduction category here.
Okay,
so that's more a business expense kind
that's
of?
That's more of a business expense, and you basically just invested your money into the company. And there's a lot of rules of you investing your money in the company and how much you can deduct and losses and stuff like that.
So without going deeper, are there ways for me to reduce my taxable income because I have a business, maybe with like similar type tactics?
No. No, because you're going to spend money on the... You're going to spend money on expenses that you're going to write off against your profit, I guess you can say. So unless you buy a bunch of things and, you know, the expenses that you have in your business far exceed your profit. But
so if you're trying to do like some quote unquote tax engineering, instead of sending your expenses to the business, you would want to send your income to the business. And that's how you could save.
No, you couldn't. You couldn't save that way either.
The way I understand it, your business makes income, and then you have business expenses, and you take those two numbers and you get your profit or loss from your business. And if you're a sole proprietorship, then that would be applied to your personal taxes, and you pay income and self-employment tax on that, assuming it's a profit, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So. All right, so I need a mull on this, and when we do that one, I'm gonna have some pretty sharp, hopefully sharp questions, because I remember, so I forget who had told me this, but you know, they're like, well, obviously tax evasion is illegal, but tax avoidance is encouraged, and I am very interested in how I may avoid how I can get part of my billion back. I guess is
of
maybe
course
a better way
everybody to wants their billion back.
So I want $1 billion, and I can't go run Tim and Eric's mall to get it. So one thing I hear about a lot is like these credits, like education credits and like earned income credit or something. I don't know. I see them in TurboTax back when I used TurboTax, and like I don't think I qualified for any of them. But what's a credit, and how can you get credits? Do they reduce your taxable income?
Yeah, so real quick, just to take it full circle, you have our AGI, and then we deduct it. We subtract our either our itemized deductions or our standard deductions, and and then to get a number, and then we subtract your exemption. So basically, the number of dependents you have, multiply that by 3,950, and then we get a number.
Okay.
And then finally, we get our taxable income. So bam, now we have our taxable income. So this is the amount of money that we pay taxes on, right?
Okay, so I have one question before we dive into credits then.
Yep.
If I am single, I have a girlfriend, no wife, no kids, do I claim zero exemptions or one exemption?
So that's on your W-4 on your through your employer, but exemptions, you'd probably claim one because you're a single guy.
Okay, so I can claim myself basically.
Yes, you'd be claiming yourself. I got it confused with your W-4.
Is there any situation where you would claim zero?
Well, if you're a dependent of another tax return, a tax preparer or tax payer. So like my sister, she's a dependent of my mom. So she has a job. So she files her taxes, but she doesn't claim her personal exemption.
Okay. So if I work at the grocery store, but I'm like a high school kid, I come home, you know, I live with my mom, everything, then I would claim zero exemptions. Because I'm a dependent, pretty much.
Yeah, you're a dependent. So you claim there's other rules for that, but for the most part, that's how it works.
Okay. And wait, again, I'm going to interrupt before we get to credit. Because you brought up a really good point, Thomas, with the W-4 form. And I'm going to say that for every single job that I've had, and whether it's the movie theater or blah, 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 and I've worked a lot of places, I get extreme amounts of anxiety filling out the W-4 form because I think that I'm doing it incorrect. And one, Johnny, is it possible for me to do it incorrect and get screwed? And two, like, is there like a strategy maybe or approach to doing it properly or maybe not properly, but more advantageous for your life situation?
So your W-4, you basically pick married or single and the number of exemptions that you have. And then there is some formula that the IRS runs through, and it says, okay, if you get paid monthly, biweekly, weekly, dailies, whatever, then you pay X number of dollars in taxes when you get paid on that paycheck. So hold that thought, and we'll get to payments right now after we're done with credits a little bit.
Sure.
And then I'll answer that question. So now we have our taxable income, and we figure out how much tax we paid. So let's say we paid, I don't know, $2,000 in tax. That's how much we're going to pay, or we should pay. That's how much our bill is. Mm-hmm. So then your bill starts to get offset by these credits that Thomas were talking about. So there's credits for all sorts of things. Child independent care expenses. You know, I pay daycare for my kids. I get a credit for that. Education credits. There's a retirement savings contribution credit. So if you if you're like lower to moderate income, you get a credit for saving for retirement. There's a child tax credit if you have children. So there's all these earned income credit. If you're kind of lower income and have children or not, you can get this some sort of credit. And it's all based on charts and things like that. So basically these credits, they, in addition to the amount that was withheld from your paycheck, get applied to that tax bill. So if your credits come out to $5,000, essentially, there's a chance that, and you have a $2,000 tax bill, there's where your $3,000 refund comes into play.
Okay.
So that's kind of taking it full circle there. And there's credits that are refundable and non-refundable. Some of them can lower your tax liability back to zero. Some of them can make it go past zero, like the earned income credit. If you have a zero tax liability, you don't pay any taxes, and you qualify for the earned income credit, it's a refundable credit, and it's a lot of money. So that's why some people get big credits because of that earned income credit.
So wait, so did I hear this right? Like there are certain credits that can only take you to zero and they won't refund you if you go past it?
Right, right. So, okay. Yep. So like the child tax credit, for instance, if I have a tax bill of $1,000 and I have two kids, the child tax credit's worth $1,000 each. So I would basically use one of those child tax credits to make my taxes go to zero. And then okay. the other one. And then there's a there's another refundable credit for the rest of it for the other kid.
So certain types of credits will just basically make like your taxes free if you got down to zero. And certain other ones are like when you extreme coupon to the point where the store has to pay you, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. Those okay. are refundable.
Like really? So there's a situation where you can actually get money from the IRS, like positive, like they're paying you. That this exists?
It does exist, but it's like your situation is probably your low income. If I were to take a stab in the dark, it's probably going to be between $25,000 and $30,000, and okay. have maybe two or three children. So it's really for really low income.
So like you literally have to have, because I know that there are quite a lot of people in the audience who earn in that range. Like the only way they'd be able to earn back from the IRS is like if they just had a bunch of kids, or are there other ways beyond kids, maybe.
So everybody's situation is different. No two situations are the same. I mean, even if you right. worked at the same job with the guy next to you, your taxes are probably going to be different, only because every little decision you make, whether you contribute to a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA or 401k or go to school or don't, has some effect on your taxes somehow, some way.
Don't have kids to get tax credits, please.
So you were telling me before, Johnny, about something that really grinds your gears. And I was going to say, so like, what really grinds your gears when people come to you for tax help?
So what really grinds my gears is people getting these huge refunds, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, right? And then complaining throughout the whole year saying, man, I don't have any money to do this, or my budget's already exhausted, or can I borrow some money? But, come February, they're a tax time baller, as I like to say. They take their refund and they make it rain, and so there's ways to combat that. If people were just understand their situation, and yes, I know taxes are boring, but at the end of the day, you have a bill, and there's ways to help you distribute that $3,000 tax return that you're going to get in February throughout the whole year to help out your situation. And so that's simply by just adjusting your W-4 and knowing your benefits.
You totally stole it out of my mouth, because I was going to be like, so back to the W-4, because I viewed the W-4 as like a lever where you could pull it towards you and maybe, you get more money back at the end, or you push it away. Like how can you leverage your W-4 to maybe get more money back now? And even if you go so extreme, you'll pay later, or take less money now and then get a huge refund at the end.
So I would say take the tax return that you're about to file this year. So once you're done, take a look at it and see what your refund is, and then see how much you're actually withheld from your paycheck, because that's part of how your refund that comes back. So if you think your situation is going to stay the same, then adjust your W-4 either higher or lower, depending on if you got a refund or whether you had to pay. There's a great calculator on the IRS website that you can use. On the back of the W-4 itself, there's a manual calculation that you can use to kind of figure how much is actually going to come out of your paycheck based on what you claim on your W-4. But if Andrew, if they email you, there's another way to do it. It's called the Circular E-Pub 15. It's a really, really nerdy way, but there's a chart in there, and it's really simple to use. So they email you, then you can get it to me, and I'll walk through that with the listener to help them
figure
it out.
And just to understand, when you say they will email you, you mean the employer or the IRS? Or
no, I meant the listener. Oh, if the listener were to email you, well, and say, hey, I need help figuring this out.
I got you.
Just get them to me, and I'll help them.
Okay. So I have a dumb question.
Dumber than my last question?
I want to ask. I've been wanting to ask it for a while, but I didn't. Well, I have two questions, but I wanted to start with the dumb one. Is the W-4 the thing you fill out when you get the job, and then the W-2 is the thing they like mail to you at tax time? Is that correct?
Yeah, so when you first get a job, all that paperwork, the W-4 is what you're going to fill out, and then the W-2 is really a summary of all your compensation and what you did from So it has your Social Security taxes, your federal taxes, your state taxes, your everything.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that, because I think a lot of people myself included, look at the paperwork, fill it out, don't memorize the name with the dash number on all these forms. So like, I want to make sure people like know exactly what is the W-4, like what does it look like, what W-2 is. I think W-2 is probably the most like recognizable form. But
I'm with you, because whenever I hear these, my eyes like glaze into the back of my head, like W-4, yeah. Blah, blah. There's probably three total forms, but like I can't handle
it. Well, yeah, when he said W-4, I was like, what is that again? I had to think, you know, for a second. So the other question, so you said like, you know, assess your situation based on the past year's data, and if you think you're going to make the same amount of money, then you could leave the W-4 the same or adjust it, you know, accordingly. So I've heard people say that, oh, hey, man, you can adjust your W-4 so they withhold a lot, and then you won't be tempted to spend money every month. You can invest that money when you get the return back, or you can, you know, do it the other way around where you get more money back. So what, like, can you explain the thinking behind withholding a bunch or not withholding very much at all, and how people could take advantage of that, and what like type of person you need to be if you're going to take it all at once?
Well, I think it all just comes down to whatever your personal strategy and your personal budget is. I mean, some people that I know use it as kind of a forced savings account because they can't, you know, they can't save on their own. So they let the IRS do it for them, and they file their tax return and they get all this money back. You know, some people like me, I don't want the IRS to hold my money. I want to spend my money and I want to save it the way I want to save it, because the IRS doesn't pay you interest. So even if I put it in a savings account, I'm earning more money on it than if the IRS were to hold it.
That's the only thing a savings account beats is the IRS.
So basically, you have to have the discipline to save regularly if you're going to not let them withhold a bunch. Pretty much.
Yeah, tax strategy is one aspect of your overall financial strategy.
Okay. So.
I have like, oh, you know what? Let's cut it here, because I actually have a lot more, but I think that we, one, need to let people marinate a bit on it before, and I want us to do like a couple like series, you know, in this whole tax thing. But before we kind of start the ends, we did, I think, forget in the beginning, there's been mention of a live webinar where we want to help you with your taxes. And by we, meaning me, Thomas, and Johnny are going to be there live, one, to teach you some tax lessons, and then two, to answer all your tax questions, which will be 100% Johnny. But if you have, you know, other questions, Thomas and I can also answer them. It's going to be live, although we will record it so you could listen and watch it after the fact. It's going to be Monday, February 2nd at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I could promise you that I will beat this into your head between now and then. I'll probably send you 100 emails. We'll mention it a couple of times in the episodes. It's our first attempt at doing something live. Johnny already has like slides planned. I think it's going to be fucking awesome, and this will be the first time ever that you get to ask us questions live and actually see our faces contort as we try and figure it out or whatever. And the one catch I want to add to that is, I'm sure you have a ton of tax questions. Don't email me any of them. Come to the webinar. If you email me a tax question, I'm going to be an asshole and I'm going to delete it. After the webinar, maybe.
You're not going to do that.
Yeah, maybe it won't be as much of an asshole, but come to
it on the webinar.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we have a bunch of stuff on Facebook. For everyone who asked a question on Facebook, we didn't forget about you. Johnny may have answered them then, but we could also touch upon it in the webinar. Come. It's going to be awesome.
So,
and we're going to drink beer.
And we're going to drink beer. We're
going to drink beer, or maybe scotch. Who knows? It's later in the evening. It might be my scotch time. Ooh. Anyway, let me give you some more relevant details about that. So, as Andrew said, it's 8:30 p.m. Eastern, which would be 5:30 p.m. West Coast time. And if you want to stay updated on it and get reminders, then sign up for the Listen Money Matters newsletter, where Andrew can remind you. And you can find the place to sign up over at listenmoneymatters.com/get-involved.
Get-involved.
That's how you spell it. And then, you know what you should do, Andrew?
What?
make one slash get involved with no dash and redirect it to the dash.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I'm realizing, like, you know, people will, like, forget the dash sometimes. I probably forget the dash. So let's make both of those.
Probably. You just did.
Either one. Get involved. Get dash involved with everyone.
Yeah.
You can sign up there, and we will keep you reminded and updated on the webinar. Hope to see you there. I'm looking forward to learning more from Johnny. So basically, I have my high school tax experience, and now I'm slowly forgetting because I just let the accountant do it all. But anyway, yeah, that's it for this episode. Unless you guys have anything else to add in, do you?
No. Oh, just one more thing. No more things. I'm gonna start to tease, right?
The last most important thing you need to know is. Anyway, we're done.
Right. I'll tell you next time.
I'll tell you next time. Anyway, so yeah, if you have questions, bring those to the webinar if they're about taxes. Otherwise, you can email them to us at listenmoneymatters@gmail.com. Andrew will get those answered in a timely fashion. Got my eye on you. Stink eye. Anyway, also at listenmoneymatters.com/get-involved, you can find instructions on how to subscribe to the show, which helps us climb the ranks in iTunes and helps you get the new episode every single time it comes out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And instructions on how to subscribe are over at that page. You can also find other ways to possibly get involved in heavier ways, joining the team potentially. And also, if you want to leave a review, that also helps us out a lot. And I'm going to read this review that I screenshotted, and the text is very small.
I can't read this review because I don't have my glasses.
I wanted to say the name. Here it is. I'm just going to read it right off iTunes instead because I got iTunes still open. So very informative. This comes from Jay Kastning. Great podcast with real-world advice from regular guys I can relate to. The mix of humor and financial advice keeps the podcast interesting when discussing a normally mundane topic, which is personal finance. Thank you so much for that review, and if you, dear listener, want to leave us a review, we'll love you forever, or at least until the heat death of the universe. Anyway, that's all we got. If you want to find our favorite personal finance resources, tools for budgeting and investing and staying informed, learning new things, head on over to listenmoneymatters.com/toolbox. That's all we have. So thanks for hanging out with us and Johnny, and we look forward to the next episode. See you guys.
Later, man.
Please tell your friends about this show.